It'll be okay.
Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again, I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2482. That's 2482, okay? I'm Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCAR. And on Tuesday and Thursday nights, we have co-hosts that come on, and they're survivors, most of them. And also, too, they are professionals, and they deal with people like us. And a lot of times, we're all very much the same. You know, and so we have, you know, all different types of questions that people can call in and ask, and not to be bashful about it, because when I first started NASCAR, which was 11 years ago, it's a good long time now, things were different. People are talking more about sexual abuse, okay? It doesn't matter whether it's incest or whether it be abuse from the outside or neglect, emotional abuse, physical abuse. We've been through it all. A lot of us have been. I have been. And tonight we have on Lori Golden. She, too, has been through it. And so our telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. We are here, you know, to support each other and to help each other. And also, you know, to answer questions if we're able to, okay? And first thing that I'm going to do, I see that we have a 409 area code. I will get to you in just a second. But I do have to read the mission statement. And then after that, I'll go to the 409 and introduce who that person might be, and we'll go from there. We have a single purpose at NASCAR, and that is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. And number one is educating the public. This is very important. That's what we're doing tonight, all right? Especially related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem. We know this. It is everywhere. It's not just in the United States. And number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors, and we do that, of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery, okay? Now, these are all very important things, intervention and prevention and recovery, very, very, very important. If we could work together as a society, as a neighborhood, as a community, and really watch our children and be more educated in, you know, in the field of child abuse, you know, and what we can do as a society to help bring that those numbers down. The statistics are so high, it's frightening. That's all I can tell you. And right now with the pandemic, with a plague, whatever you want to call it, It's risen horribly. The ER rooms are full of kids who are being physically abused, who knows, maybe sexually abused as well. And this is a horrible thing. It was horrific before, and now it's even more horrific. I have two people now who have called in. I do want to bring them on. And then we'll get started with the show. Okay, hold on one second. A 409 area code. Who am I speaking to?
Roberta in Oklahoma.
No, I thought so. I'm glad you're here, Roberta. I'm glad you're here.
Thank
yeah,
you.
Tonight's
I'm
the
glad
open
to be
mic
here.
Night. Yes. Yeah, I'm glad you're here, too. Let me bring on the 931 area code. I'm not too sure who that is. Let's bring them on. Area code 931, who am I speaking to?
Oh, come on, Carol.
Well, I don't know. I can't help it. I can't remember all these telephone numbers.
I know. I could teach you, though, this Darlene.
I know that. I know it now because you're talking, and there's only one Darlene that sounds like you. Yes, this is true. Okay. So we have Darlene from Tennessee also. So we have Roberta from Oklahoma, and we have Darlene from Tennessee. Tonight's topic is going to be about what's happening inside the home, okay? Because the reason being is I'm an incest survivor. I also was raped outside of the home, too. And our guest, our co-host guest, she too is an incest survivor. And there's so many of us who have gone through that at home. And you have no way to turn. And it's such a frightening, frightening thing. It truly is. And I still don't know where to tell people where to turn. I mean, kids, if they are being abused at home, who are they going to go to? They're scared to death many times to go to neighbors. They don't want to. It's too embarrassing. And it's frightening. They don't really want to go to other family members because they're afraid they'll break up the family. You know, something bad could happen. And then certainly they're going to go to the person who they say is abusing them, whether it be their father, their mother, their brother, or their uncle, whatever. It's a very difficult thing for a child to go through any kind of sexual abuse, and then to have it come from the home makes it, I do believe, worse. Okay, let's go to Lori, because I'm going to read a little bit of her bio, because maybe people don't know this much about Lori. And tonight's special co-host is Lori Golden, and she is from San Diego, California. She is a survivor and a private psychotherapist working with other trauma and abuse survivors. Lori shares, I am a survivor of incest. My father sexually abused me from the age of 5 to 16, and when the sun went down, I was filled with terror, hypervigilance. I'm still hypervigilant and waiting. And that's why I talk so fast. Anyway, and I'm from New York. That helps, too. All right. Everything in my room came alive, she says. Lori started using drugs in college at the age of 18 and covered her worthlessness, aloneness, and increasing desperation with bulimic exercising, food addiction, and drugs. Now, this is only a little bit of it. This is not uncommon to we, the survivor, because many times we go through all of these things, too. Maybe not all of them together, but I certainly can identify, you know, with a lot of things. Lori, you being the co-host tonight, okay, I'm going to have... Mm-hmm. Roberta, if she wants to ask you a question, or Darlene, if she wants to ask you a question. But I do want to say here, too, I think that there's so many people, they don't realize that when they see a person who's bulimic, of course, that's when you overeat, or you're anorexic, meaning the opposite, many times it is from child abuse, and many times it is from sexual abuse. What do you have to say about that? Go ahead.
Well, there is a very high statistic about that. Bulimia, exercise bulimia, it can be from over binging and laxatives. People use diuretics. People use, a lot of people use amphetamines. And it could be obesity. But yes, there is a high percentage of people, a very high percentage, that have been sexually abused. It's just very interesting. It makes sense when I think about it because, you know, when you binge and you throw up, you're trying to get rid of something. And,
right.
you know, same with exercise bulimia. You know, I would eat and then exercise like crazy to get rid of what I just put in my mouth. So it's like constantly trying to get out something, to get free of something. But, you know, I want to mention, you said about children today in their homes and the high percentage of children that are being abused. Do you know, every 9 seconds, it's reported that there's a sexual abuse case going on with a child. Every 9 seconds. And 38% are children under the age of 12 being abused by family, or extended family or family members. And so what, a lot of times when we think of abuse, we feel more comfortable thinking it's strangers, or we feel more comfortable thinking it's acquaintances or people out of the home. But the truth is, a lot of it is in the home. And it really is a very, very complex issue, because to tell on a parent within the family, you really do run the risk of breaking up the entire family.
Yep.
And it's yes, something that children are terrified of, that the mom will leave. If it's an extended family, they're going to cut them off from the family. There's so many different issues that come up around being abused within families that we live in. It really is.
Right.
It's a terrible issue. And 38%.
Hold on 1 second, Lori, hold on a second, because we have another caller, and I don't want them to feel like we're ignoring them. Okay, 607 area code. Who am I speaking to? Hey.
Hi.
Who am I speaking to? Who is
this? Is Mary Ellen.
Hi, Mary
Hello.
Ellen.
Hi, how are you? I'm glad you're here. Hi. Yes, I am. We have a nice little panelist building. I didn't mean to interrupt you, Lori, but when I have a person, you know, coming on.
Interrupt.
Yeah,
no.
I want to bring them on also, okay?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't at all feel like you're interrupting. Not a problem.
Yeah. Please go ahead, though, and continue.
I would really love to hear from people that have called in. Is there anything, Darlene or Roberta, anything anybody wants to bring up or share or contribute?
Yeah.
Okay, who's saying Go ahead.
Darlene.
Is this Mary Ellen or is this, it sounds like Mary Ellen. I'm not sure. Go ahead.
It's a Darlene.
Okay, Darlene.
I did it again, by God. Now, don't you think by now I'd know your voice? How many times do we speak? I don't know. Maybe you sound... I'll make my phone louder. Hold on. Okay.
Okay.
She knows me well
I'm
enough
looking.
Not to take offense. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Yes, I am looking at your LinkedIn page, and I really love what you had posted there 11 minutes ago. As a survivor of childhood sexual abuse, I have found peace and strength. What I was forced to endure has made me who I am today, and for this I am grateful.
Mm-hmm.
And it's I understand this really well, but you know, to somebody I might read it to right now, they'll say, "Well, how can that be? You know, why are you grateful you're sexually abused? You're not grateful that you were sexually abused." You're grateful that you rose above it and made you're stronger, and you overcame that bad demon behind you, basically.
Yes. I am grateful for the strength that my recovery has given. Yes.
So that's why I wanted to make sure to let people know, you know, that the strength that we say, if you know, some of them may be you out there listening tonight, you know. And so I just wanted you to touch on what processes did you go through that made you stronger, okay?
Well, you're asking me personally right now?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You know, my old goal from the time I started to remember and got my memory back, my whole goal was for me to speak the truth about myself. And I committed myself 100% to doing that and to doing this recovery. This was in 19, you know, it was quite some time ago. It was 1987 when I first got off of drugs and when I first began to remember that I was sexually abused. And it took me about 6 months to realize it was my father. And it, you know, it brought me to a life. I live out in the open today. You know, I lived in secrecy for so many years. All my childhood, all my growing up years, up until I said I was an incest survivor, I was living in secrecy. And in secrecy, I was isolated from people. And I always felt alone, that something was hidden inside me. I didn't remember what it was, but I always felt that deep down inside, I was really ashamed of myself. And I felt a lot of self-hatred. So when I think about what I've gone through to be who I am today, I am truly grateful I turned all that horror into wisdom and strength and courage to be who I am today, to be able to freely share about this and to be able to communicate with other survivors what recovery is really like and what it's like not to get recovery. Because if I didn't get recovery, I'd be living in constant fear. And I don't live in constant fear anymore. And I don't live in shame. I'm not ashamed of myself anymore. I'm not carrying the effects of what was done to me. But it was a hard, I worked, to tell you the truth, I worked my butt off. And I wouldn't have done it any differently, but I did work very hard on making this my recovery and finding out who I am a priority in my life. And I really am grateful for all that it's taught me to be today.
Well, I think that's, I think you answered that. What do you think about that, Darlene?
Did I answer? Is there something specific that you would like to know about it, about my recovery or about recovering?
Yes. One thing I know, one thing we've been touching on a lot lately is some people say, well, I'm seeing a therapist and it's not working. Well, they need, a lot of times the person needs to find a therapist who really understands them and it believes you. That's the utmost thing. Therapy would not go well if the therapist don't believe you. Like one therapist I had told me my daddy never sexually abused me, that I wanted him to, though. You know how bad that made me? Oh, boy.
No, that's horrible.
Yeah, so
yeah,
I went before that for years, you know, and then I was stuck over there and that, and I was like, I uncovered it for so many years, and I'm not going to cover it back up, you know. I'm not going to dig it back up. Cover it back up, bury it, you know. So there will be at times when you're taking steps forward, and then it seems like, why did I even open up this can of worms, you know?
Yes, and that is what a lot of people, you know, you brought up a good point. A lot of people that I meet and that actually come to me initially, and they'll say, I don't want to have to do this. I don't want to have to look at this. I've already lived through it. It's too painful. And my reaction is, but you live in it every single day, whether you know it or not. You're living in the effects and the constraints of what childhood abuse does to us as adults. And we really do live in it. And it comes out in the choices we make for ourselves. It comes out in the way we handle our emotions, the way we or don't handle our emotions. You know, it's not in the past. I always say to people, it's not in the past. It's alive in who you are today. You know, and so when
right.
people say, I don't want to look at it, it's kind of like, I always think of it like this. I think of abuse as monsters in the closet. You know, adults
uh-huh.
think that as long as I keep that closet shut and I don't open it, I'm safe. But the truth is, now you're living in fear of what's inside.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's like
yes.
when you don't deal with your abuse. You live in fear of what's inside you, whether you're consciously
yes.
aware of that or not.
There are a lot of these older people that's never dealt with their abuse, and then they get mad about all these other kids that's abused and everything, and they're like, how can this happen? And I come right out and tell them, because people are not telling their stories. They're not sticking up. They're letting perpetrators just walk on by because they're afraid.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, there's so many reasons why, you know, it goes on and why it gets worse when so many of the perpetrators never had to face the repercussions.
Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really true. One of the things that I like about, that I really want to convey to people is that adults who were survivors of childhood sexual abuse. Now, this is a show that also deals with all other kinds of abuse, so I'm not just narrowing it down, but let's just look at this one issue right now. It's us that are going to make things change. If we speak out about our childhood abuse, then we can educate people about child sexual abuse. Children can't speak up, and they can't educate. But the more survivors get honest about their own abuse, the more we can bring this out into the open and have discussions about it that can help educate people.
That's right. That's right. Hold on a second. Well, hold on a second. Someone's moving around a little too much. I'm going to have to... Not Darlene, you're in the middle of a conversation. Hold on a second. But let me mute the mics for a second. She'll say, that girl, she's crazier than I thought. I can just hear her saying it. Okay. And what I'll do is I'm going to, after you have your conversation here, I want Mary Ellen, because she had to wait, I'm going to go to her. And then, of course, we're going to
yes.
go to Roberta. Okay. We'll do it that way. And I'm going to give out the number
yes.
again. Oh, my computer, don't you dare. Don't you dare get out of here. Anyway, the number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. We're speaking about, we're speaking about incest right now. Oh, the big naughty, naughty. People don't want to talk about it, but it's out there everywhere, okay? Don't feel... bashful about speaking to any of us, because we've been through it, all of us. I think all of us on this panel have been through that. And so therefore, if you have any questions, call in. Be a part of the panel. Be a part of the show. And remember, you're helping to educate those who are listening through their computers, okay, who don't know enough about incest and why they feel the way they do. Okay, go ahead. You guys keep going. And then I do want to go to Mary Ellen and, of course, Roberta. Go ahead.
Yes, Mary Ellen. Yes, let's go to Mary Ellen, because I feel like, unless there's, I personally don't have more to say at this
yeah.
moment, but
okay.
I hope I got across
okay.
what I was hoping to.
Okay, I was about to say something, you know, else. But, okay.
I'll get back to you. We're not going anywhere.
Okay.
Don't worry about it. Okay. We have, and then we'll straighten that out. Okay, Mary Ellen from New York, go ahead.
All right. Yes, I am a survivor of incest. I was very young. My first memory that is vivid, I was 5, and I would say from 5 through 12, it was pretty much constant, and it was my father. But I really think that it happened prior to that, because I can remember at 3, he just being terrified of him, and not knowing why. So, and there was, like, when I was prior to 5, my mother and him were separated, and he had visited, and I remember just being so grateful, even of his smell, of his voice, and at that time, I didn't even know who he was, and it wasn't until I was an adult that I started talking about this memory, and my mother was like, well, that was your father, you know, but at 5 years old, he gained custody of all of us, and the sexual abuse from my siblings, what they've said, nothing ever happened to them. So I always felt like I was, there had to be something wrong with me, you know, why was I the one that was targeted? And they still to this day just idolize my father, and I've always just been so fearful of him. He's passed now, and so has my mother, so that's, you know, another story. But from all of that, I did develop an eating disorder, and I remember my beginning of it, which it never got addressed until I was, I think, 33, when the first time I was in treatment for it. But I do remember 5, 6, 7 being scared to death to sit at the same table and eat with him. And I think that's where I started using the coping mechanism that if I didn't eat, it numbed the fear. And then as I moved forward in my life, when I would get into really stressful situations or there was domestic violence, that was my coping mechanism that I used, was to starve myself in a hope that I could numb out all the pain. So definitely I can relate to some of the comments that have been made about that. And I also believe that I used it as a way of not being noticed. Like, I almost felt like if I was smaller, no one would see me. I didn't want to be recognized. I didn't want the attention of people looking at me. Like, I can remember them saying about my sisters, how beautiful they were, whatever. I just didn't want that kind of recognition because it made me feel unsafe. And so it was my way of hiding. Yep, and I mean, just here a year ago, I was back in treatment again, and I had a relapse when my mom died. Just a whole bunch of stuff come flooding in like it does. And like you said, you know, unless you are facing it and talking about it and expressing it, it's in there living in you, and you're just ignoring it when you think it's gone. That's my feeling anyhow. And when you start blocking those thoughts out, it has a way of showing up. And that's kind of what happened recently with me. And thankfully, I knew when it hit, I knew to reach out and to get help and what direction to head. And that was huge.
When you say you knew, Mary Ellen, when you say you knew when it hit, can you explain that a little? Because that's an important phrase you just said.
Yes. I think we definitely have to be our own advocates. You know your body. You need to pay attention to those signals. I was having nightmares. I was not eating. I was just in going in a spiral into a very dangerous health spot. And I had to walk into my doctor's office and insist that I get a referral to the eating disorder clinic where I had been in the past. And he just looked at me and said, "Wow, you have this?" And I'm like, "You have all the documentation on file. Just because I'm standing here in front of you and I'm not whatever number you expect to see doesn't mean I'm not suffering and I'm not struggling." And he wrote the referral, but he truly thought I was fine, and fine was far from the truth. And when I went to the treatment center, they, because I come right out and said to the psychiatrist, I said, "Am I misjudging this?" And she said, "Absolutely not." And she pulled out my labs and blood works, and she goes, "Your heart's out of rhythm, you know, your kidneys are failing." And she just read all of these symptoms that were being overlooked by my doctor. And had I known, you know, it could have gotten much worse. And like one of the ladies just spoke about a therapist saying something that set her back. When I was in treatment, after this, you know, when you get out of treatment, inpatient, when I got out, I was in outpatient treatment, and I had a new therapist I had never met, and a little bit into it, I was speaking about my ongoing nightmares of my father, and it was like this evil coming after me, you know, and it would just terrorize me in my sleep. And I said, "I know that, you know, it's memories from the sexual abuse, and that's what I need to be focused on." Well, she didn't want to go there, and she said to me, "Don't you think this is a little ridiculous? The man is dead. What harm can he do?" And it took my breath away. She did.
She said that to you?
Yes. It took my breath away, and then I just took a deep breath, and I looked at her, and I said, "I remember talking to you about angels." And I said, "I have two siblings that I feel have passed, and I said, I feel they're very close to me, and I often feel like they're watching over me." And when I made those comments, you could agree with that. And she said, "Yes." I said, "Well, if you believe in angels, how do you not believe in evil? Because
good for you.
One is just as significant as the other. And yeah, there is definitely evil in this world. There's evil walking among us. There's, you know," and I was just so set back by her words, but I stood my ground, and thank God I did, because, and I said, you know, had that been somebody who hadn't already come to the point where I was, they would have accepted that and turned it inwards again on themselves. You know, it's that shame that whatever our thoughts are, they're not accepted or they're not valid or, and I'm just still to this day, I keep thinking, thank goodness I stood up for myself at that moment, because it could have been the other way really easy.
Okay, everybody, I want to say something. We have another caller here, too, and we have to get to Roberta also. you can respond to that. I just want to, now the last caller here appears to be Skype, okay? And I just want them to know I have their mic open, so, and they're listening to all of this, and I will respond to them in just a second. Do you have a response for that?
No. I think she said it. I mm-hmm. wanted to hear more about it, and thank you for sharing.
You're welcome. And we will get back to that. I very much believe in angels, by the way. I know that I was touched on my shoulder by an angel. Absolutely. All right. Roberta, I'm going to go to you, but I do want the Skype number to know that that they are acknowledged as well. Who am I speaking to? This is Carol Levine from the Stop Child Abuse Now show. 1111? Skype? Hello? Okay, this person may just want to listen. Sometimes they use Skype just for that because they do want to listen. I'm glad you're here. We're all glad you're here. And hopefully, you know, maybe you can learn something tonight. In fact, I think this is a very good show, and I'm glad that everyone is sharing the way that they are. Now, let's go up to Roberta now, okay, and see if she has something she'd like to make a comment about. Go ahead.
Yes, this is Roberta. Can you hear me?
Hi, Roberta.
Oh, yeah, we can hear you.
Hi, Roberta.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know. I was listening and I was thinking, there's just too many places, too many homes, too many people, too many incidents, too many horrible crimes done against me in my early childhood, and not all of it's pieced together yet. And I just want the door to close, you know, and, you know, where it opened and just forget it. But, you know, it doesn't work like that. You know, I'm going to be starting therapy. I'm going to go to, I just recently moved back to my home state where a lot of these problems originated. And, you know, where I was born. I'm going next week to apply for services from a mental health place where I'll be getting medicine and therapy and planning on getting medicine and therapy. And I guess, you know, it's just, you know, right now it's like, you know, whenever I start to sense things that I don't feel like are normal or something that's starting to scare me or come up and scare me, I just pray, you know, because you know, there's, you know, eventually I'm going to have to work through these things. But right now I'm just kind of like shutting them out, you know, and like saying, you know, there's a time and place for everything. Right now is not the time to go into mm-hmm. the deeper meaning of things, and because I have not began to even search out everything. I don't know if everything will ever be searched out, because a lot of abuse started in my early childhood, and it wasn't just physical and sexual abuse, it was verbal abuses, and I have a long story. A lot of people abused me, and you know, and even whenever I started reporting things, it was like, you know, shut up, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, or you're crazy. You know, and then I was thinking, well, what's the payoff and trade-off? Someone must have been paying somebody off to, killing three of my babies, you know, in different hospitals, you know. And I'm thinking, well, you know, that's their problem, not mine now, you know. So, you know, I have pain, anger, and grief, and I'll be able to work through it. But whenever I was younger, to deal with the pain, anger, and grief, I couldn't deal with it. I mean, I did drugs to escape, or, you know, to escape the pain, or I did alcohol to escape the pain, or I'd overeat to escape the pain, or I'd get lost in all this sex club crowd, you know. And I think it was because of pornography to begin with. A lot of it might have started because of pornography in my early childhood, but you know, it's just like, why do so many people want to be interested in my love life and my sex life? And I'm thinking, now that I was exploited, it's like, well, I can't even have a relationship with a man now because of how many times I was raped and how many times I was exploited and how many, you know. And the thing of it is that some people, you know, they threaten me if I talked, and I went through it all, you know. And you know, but I'm glad I'm here, and I'm glad to listen that you survived, that all of us are survivors, and that I'll get past this. But, you know, sometimes I just want to shut it all out, you know, and shut the door, you know, and, you know, just like, you know, a few minutes ago, I started thinking about how I was beat up and raped one time, and, And, you know, I felt like someone was stabbing me in my back because I got hit in my back real bad one time and on the side of my head. And I thought, well, you know, I'm just going to shut that out. And then sometimes I get these feelings that some sex addicts still connected to me, you know, lusting after me. And they got the secret sin connection to me and, you know, all them kinds of things. And then I just pray, you know, I say, well, holy master, mastermind, them kind of masterminds, you know, it's like, well, you know, I'm going to overcome. I haven't overcome all of it yet, but I feel like I'm going to overcome. But to think that I'll ever have a relationship with anybody intimate relationship, you know, or sexual relationship, I don't think it could ever happen, you know, but that's just how I feel mm-hmm. now. But I do know I have a relationship with my Creator, and I do know that I do believe I have angels watching over me. And I know I don't doubt it at all. And I'm glad, you know, because I'm being delivered from all this and I'm going to come out stronger. You know, I'm already getting stronger, but I'm going to be more stronger, you know, and I'll be able to help someone one day.
Well, I think that what you're saying, you know, a lot of us go through this, Roberta, you know, and a lot of us think to ourselves, my God, we have been abused so much in so many different ways. I don't know if I want to, I want to be loved and I want to give love, okay? But there's a part of me that thinks, you're safe right now. I was married most of my life. Think about it. 37 years to one guy who was, he was not that good of a guy. He has passed. And 13 years to another guy who is the father of our children, and he too passed. Alcohol, drug abuse, the whole nine yards, and of course I'm an alcoholic, and I was popping a lot of pills to try and make that awful pain go away, you know, all those thoughts, all those things, you know, that happened to us as a child. We can't do that, but what we can learn to do is to learn how to live with it, okay? And you right now are in the middle of a puzzle. You and I speak about that. And you're finding pieces to that puzzle. And maybe you'll find all the pieces and maybe you won't. Maybe you'll have a boyfriend again someday because you're not, you know, you're not 90, okay, or whatever, you know. And maybe you won't. And there's some people that are happy with that, you know, just by being quiet. They're not being screamed at. They're not being punched. They're not being belittled. They're not being sexually abused. All these things that we go through, and there's a part of us that say, you know what? I'm my own boss. I can come and go as I want. I can do what I want. I can sleep as late as I want. I can go to bed when I want. I can do what I want. I can go where I want. So there's that. This is what I have in my head. Yes, I want to be loved, and yes, I want to give love. I have a lot of love in me. I don't know why, but I do have a lot of love in me, you know, to give. But I don't know if I actually want someone living with me. They can stay in their house. I'll stay in my house, okay, and all this other stuff. That's how I feel right now. Let's go to, I want to go back to Darlene because she was like in the middle of a question or something that she wanted to ask. Darlene, do you remember what that was?
I'm on a different kind of question now. You know, can you imagine, you know, like there's homecoming, that group that thing that's coming out where they're finding all these missing kids in different states. I think the name of it's Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever. Can you imagine all these kids that's got to go through all this that we're going through?
Yep.
Isn't that a sad thought?
Mm-hmm. Those kids have to be programmed, okay, reprogrammed. I was working in New York City with kids that were being taken off of the street at one time. They had a program that was going, and then the funding, this is years ago actually, funding went away. Now, I don't know, I don't think they have it. But these kids are taken out on the street, and yes, they're prostituted out. And sometimes, too, they end up leaving the country. It depends on the situation. It depends on the pimp. It depends on the organization that they belong to. It's disgusting. And they have, you know, a quota that they have to meet. You're right. They have a quota that they have to meet. And if they don't meet that quota, they're beaten. Of course, they have, you know, they pump them full of heroin many times, moreover than not. After they use the arms and the veins collapse, and they use the neck, they use the toes, there's any place where there's a vein, it's a terrible thing. And then when they reach a certain age, if they survive all of this horrifying situation and condition, if they survive, Darlene, then they might say, you're too old now. They might be 25, 30 years old, but you're too old because, you see, they've been doing it for years. These people need a tremendous amount of help. And it's out there all over the place. It's right down the street. You don't realize it, okay? That kids are being abducted, okay? Let's see, I have the stats on that. It's every 40 seconds a child gets abducted. And you may not see them ever again, all right? Some are murdered, and some are just used out on the street. And then when they are picked up, if they do get picked up in the right way, they have to be deprogrammed. And it takes years of intense therapy. All right, to get these children, you know, back to where they should be. If they're younger and they're found, like is so the case of the kids that you're speaking about, and there's two different states involved, yes, they can be worked with sooner and faster, and hopefully, you know, things will be a lot better for them. A lot of times you have to look in those families too, though, because if children aren't being supervised properly, then abduction is an easy thing. That's why CPS was after my mother. Hi?
What's so sad about it, you know, some of the parents are the ones responsible for going ahead and selling these
kids,
you know?
No, that happens a lot, too. And Lori would certainly know about all this information that we're speaking about, but people out there who don't know, this can happen. The parents want the money. They don't care how they get it. Go ahead.
But, you know, when we talk about something like this, always, one of the reasons I wrote my book was because my sexual abuse happened in a community where this is not supposed to happen. And it's very interesting that the society believes that it's in only lower income families where this kind of thing occurs. And it's not. It's across the board. It's in lower, middle, upper, and rich. And it really, I grew up in a really nice Jewish community on Merrick, Long Island. And, you know, both parents were college educated. My father owned a reputable dress company in Manhattan. My mother was always involved in educational services. And I was incested by my father. And this is the kind of community where people think this doesn't take place.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that we are not talking about the low-income communities only. The rich are the people that keep sex trafficking going. We are the rich people keep sex trafficking going. Powerful people in government keep sex trafficking going.
Mm-hmm.
This is not in one area of society. It is across the board, and I hear all the time people being shocked by a school teacher in a nice community that, oh my God, this was happening right in our community. This never happens in our community, and it's not true. And I don't know what
That's
it's going to take to get people out of denial about this. But isn't it, don't you find that to be true?
I was wealthy. I came from a very wealthy family. They're also very political. My so-called grandfather, DNA shows a little something funny there. I won't talk about that now because I'm Italian, I'm Swiss, I'm French, and it just didn't happen
right.
to the family. But anyway.
Right.
Yeah, Darlene's laughing at me. But anyway, the point is they were very, very, very wealthy people. They rubbed elbows with politicians, and they rubbed elbows with Hollywood, for God's sake. They were florist growers, and in those days, back in those days, flowers were a big deal in New York City. They had their flower.
Yes.
You know this. You're from New York. They had
yeah.
their flower shows. And my grandfather was one of the best flower growers in the world. I have one of his cups out in my garage that he had been presented to him and his brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so it doesn't matter whether you're rich or whether you're poor or whether you're, if there is a middle class, you know, whatever. That's always something that's hard to keep is the middle class. But it doesn't matter because if you're going to be abducted, or if there's a sexual abuse going on in the home, it can happen in any place. It can happen in any economic background. It doesn't matter. That's the truth. It happened in mine.
I know.
And I was wealthy. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was,
whatever, I had to get to the root of my sexual abuse. I remembered back at age 3 where my mom put my naked body on the kitchen table. My dad stood behind the guys. The guy used a beer bottle, but I remember Mom telling me, "You better lay still." He paid me $30 to do this. You better lay still, you know. And so I already knew call a laying still. I didn't try to jump. It's like I was already so I probably was already messed with as a baby and everything else as well, you know, but that's the first time I actually remember, you know, where it went on my mind about the sexual thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the most disturbing was, is, you know, going to talk to a state trooper about the genealogy. And then hearing his first words that come out of his mouth were, "I enjoyed doing you when you were a little girl."
Nice.
I remember you, you know. And my legs went out from underneath me, and I fell into the chair. I wanted to get away from him, but my legs wouldn't move. You know, I was frozen, you know, where I fell into the chair, literally, you know. And I said, "You know what?" He said his daddy had over 300 porno tapes, and I was in the majority of them. And I was like, "I hope you destroyed him since your dad's dead." He said, "No, his dad had a friend that enjoyed him too, so he just gave him to him." And I thought, "Well, you're a state trooper."
Well, you know, so many children are photographed. That's horrible. Go ahead, Lori. Go ahead.
No, I'm listening. I agree. So
yeah.
many children are photographed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I know.
So it don't
and
matter.
Word,
it don't matter who is. You know, it could be a police officer or whatever. But you'll know who the right person to trust. You just keep yelling and screaming till you find the right person who will listen.
Mm-hmm.
Tell,
hard to
you
do.
Know, tell. If the first person don't believe you, go tell somebody else. You know, there's
mm-hmm.
so many people
well,
that
you know,
are supposed to. Once they know, you know, like teachers or a doctor or whatever.
It's so
well,
hard
what we need
for people
is...
to tell.
Go ahead.
No, it's so hard for people to tell because we carry so much shame in us when we've been abused as children. Children blame themselves and they think that they've done something bad. And the shame is what gets in the way of us as adults telling. And I hope people listening, if whoever's listening, if you haven't told anyone about your sexual abuse, that is a very important part of healing, telling someone so that you're not in it alone anymore.
And we have a whole list on the website of people to contact So, you know, feel free to contact any of the people on the contact list.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's exactly right. And then, see, Darlene is an ambassador and for Tennessee. And I'm imploring, all right, for the ambassadors to please call in, you know, once a month, okay, if you can do that. Because and a lot of times they don't know exactly what their, you know, position is. And I'm going to say it right on the air because I've been trying to get a hold of the ambassadors to reinstate them if they need to be reinstated and also to find out what's going on with them. But what happens with the ambassadors is that you call the ambassadors of your state, okay, and you ask them questions and they're a listening ear. They know the website inside and out, and they describe the website to you. If you need a program, one thing that the ambassadors do, I've been doing this for years, is you go over to the program area. That would be, first of all, it's www.nasca, that's NASCA.org. You scroll down a little bit, and you'll see red lines going across, and under each line is a menu. On the left-hand side, the very first line is programs. It says programs. And I've helped many people, all right, to find programs in their area. And many times it's free. And these people, these groups, all right, everyone's the same as you are. And this way you feel like you're not alone because you're not alone because there is so much sexual abuse out there. And, you know, and a lot of people, you know, have the same problems, came from the same type of background. Maybe not all the stories are the same. But on the other hand, they're certainly close enough where they can relate to a lot of things that you're saying. And you meet people that way and you don't feel alone. So that's very, very, very good. I'm the night owl on the contact page. I do get. I do receive phone calls at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning. And if I think it's a dire situation, one that really needs to be, you know, addressed right away, I will call 911. I've done that before. If I feel like a person is possibly suicidal, done that. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had kids call me. I don't even know how they get my number, for God's sake. But, I mean, like 17-year-olds. And also two college kids. But the point is this. Well, the college I understand better because I do a lot of presentations there, but not the other ones. But anyway, the point is this. We are there. And like Darlene says, you are not alone, okay? And if people want to be a part of the contact list, you call Bill, okay? He's our CEO. You call him. You let him know. He's the founder of NASCA. And you can be put on that contact list. And it's very important for people, you know, to understand that they're not alone in what they're going through. A lot of times people think they're crazy, for God's sake, because of the way they feel. And we all know that. We've all been there. A lot of us have been there. I used to question myself if I was nuts many times. There's one good thing in that. If you're questioning whether you're nuts or not, chances are you're not. Okay, because no. The people.
Chances
that's true.
Are. Chances are. It's truly.
Yeah.
Chances are you're going to be. Right, right.
Yeah. NASCA has even got a part on there. Like, if y'all wonder any of the books that some of the NASCA people have written, you know, some of the people that's part of NASCA. Anytime you talk, join, or anything like that, guess what? You're a part of NASCA. So there's a list of books also if you're interested in finding that.
That's right. Yep. And our guest tonight, our co-host tonight, she has written a book. I think she wrote it a year ago. It says My House of Lies, Awakening from a Childhood of Sexual Abuse, and it was published last year. There you go. And she is very passionate about telling her story. And you see, you know, telling the story is really a big deal because we do have a large amount of people who do listen to NASCA. They listen on their computers. A lot of times people are ashamed or they feel bashful about being on open air, you know, having people listen, you know, to what they might say. And then a lot of times, too, they want to learn that way, and that's fine, okay? But when you come to the point where you tell your story, you feel better, okay? Maybe not the first time, but by the time you do it a few times, you feel a lot better. It sort of like empowers you. You realize that you're helping people out there. You're doing something, right? You're making people mm-hmm. realize that they're not alone. Okay, and this is mm-hmm. very, very important. Yeah, it is very important. That's only one way.
One way, but I think that is the most significant part of healing is in the telling. Because mm-hmm. you can't begin recovery until you tell. You can't heal alone. Because when we're abused, we're alone. And as long as you don't tell, you live behind the closed door with your abuser. You may not realize you're living with your abuser, but you are. You're abiding by the secret. And if you don't tell, you continue to blame yourself. Because telling is the one thing that makes us realize not only that we're not alone, but that we're not to blame. That's the biggest thing, because I really thought that I was to blame. Because growing up in my family, the book is called My House of Lies. There was no one spoke the truth. So when you grow up like that, you feel like you're crazy. You really do. You believe your perceptions are crazy, what you think is crazy. You can't trust yourself. It's an awful experience to become an adult and not feel like you can trust yourself. And I think recovery for me has been about learning how to trust myself. That's probably the biggest gift I've gotten from being in recovery, from childhood sexual abuse, is I can finally trust myself. And, you know, when you're being abused and no one's owning it, what are you supposed to do with that? Children just take mm-hmm. it upon themselves to blame themselves. That's the only thing that makes sense.
Well, I'll tell you what, Lori. Now, see, I'm a different kind of person, and people who know me will tell you that, okay? I never felt ashamed. I felt dirty. And I was the type of kid, and I love my showers, man. I love them. I will not go to bed unless I have my shower. That's just the way I am. But when I was younger, I was scrubbing too hard because I felt dirty, okay? I didn't feel ashamed.
Yes.
And
I didn't feel, yes. Go on.
I didn't even feel like it was my fault because I knew it was wrong. You know what it is? I'm a people watcher, and I used to watch families, and I would see how they treated their children. Of course, this is what we see on the outside. They appear to be like the Leave It to Beaver. I always use that as an example, you know, type of people, and they're showing fondness and affection and pride and you know, having these nice, beautiful children, and they're dressed well, and they behave well, and do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. I'll sing you a song if you want. Anyway, okay, so I didn't come from that. Even though I came from wealth, I didn't have that type of atmosphere or an environment. And what people too, though, don't realize is those people out there who present themselves, sometimes they're phony, because the minute they go home, honey, and they go inside that house, then the true people, the true family comes out. This is something I've learned over years too. You know, but the children who are properly nurtured, who have been taught that they do have boundaries, there are boundaries in life. There are also consequences if you do something wrong. And there's praise if you do something right. These are the children that grow up and they're well-balanced, and they turn into well-balanced adults. And they're going to, chances are, you know, treat their own children the same way as they were taught. And that's good. But unfortunately, we don't have, I don't think we have enough of that. You know, we have, I don't think so. Look what's going on in our world today. Look at it.
I know.
People out there, you know, ruining buildings and shops and the fires and all the things that are happening, shooting each other, for God's sake, and even children. Shooting children. A one-year-old baby, it was a couple weeks ago, was shot. Why? A one-year-old baby. Does that make sense? None of it makes sense. This is crazy.
Yeah.
This is lunacy, all right? And even as rough as I was, one thing I never did do was destroy property, because the businesses that my family had, they brought as dumps, and we would turn it into gold mines. Actually, they did. I would just sort of like help, always trying to get their affection, their attention. Look what Carol's doing. Oh, my God, she's helping us. Blah, blah, blah. Didn't work. Mm-mm. Okay. All right. But I had pride in the fact that they had made it into a gold mine, and they had made it beautiful, made something ugly beautiful, okay? So I did learn that from my childhood. But that's the only thing I had. I didn't have love. I didn't have attention. I didn't have instruction. I didn't have I was told to run away, and I did. Why not, okay? So I turned to alcohol and drugs at a very early age, and smoking cigarettes, of course. That was nothing back then. It didn't mean anything anyway. You know, so all these things that we do, you know, to try and make ourselves feel better until we get the help that we need, you know, it's actually damaging us, the alcohol, the drug abuse, the overeating, the undereating, all these things, the cutting. Okay, the suicidal ideations that I used to suffer from. We've spoken about this before on the show. And then also, too, being afraid to panic attacks, which turns many times into panic disorder, which I did go through, and that's why I started drinking. Disorder is worse than the panic attack. It rules your life. And then, like Darlene says from time to time, she says how she couldn't leave her house. She had agoraphobia. She was suffering from that as well. Yeah. The complex PTSD, which so many of us, we don't speak enough about the complex PTSD. And yet that's because we were so terribly violated as a child. You know, crimes against children, which is what I call it, crimes against children. So, you know, when you have these crimes against children, PTSD in itself is bad enough, but when you have complex PTSD, Lori, why don't you speak about that? Speak about complex PTSD.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's the severity of it, and it's the complications, that it's the degree of dissociation, and it's the degree of, and you know, when we talk about PTSD, everything is on a continuum. You know, how would you describe it if you were to describe complex PTSD? What is the easiest way for you? I'm just curious. What do you say about it?
Oh, well, mercy. Anything that I feel is amplified 10-time-fold, okay? Like with the hypervigilance, okay? Okay.
Yeah.
So complex PTSD is, PTSD, but even deeper. The problem is deeper. Go
it's
ahead.
More, it's on a continuum. It's more severe.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The dissociation,
and you'd be surprised,
is more intense.
Yes.
Go on.
There's a lot of people with dissociation, you know, that come to our show, that are a part of this show. I didn't have that. I think I was starting to get it. Now this is one time when I was embarrassed because I got caught talking to, my make-believe friends. I didn't have, the friends that I should have had at one point in my life, because I was so abused. I didn't look right. I probably didn't even smell good. I don't know. You know, it was that bad, all right? So I was made fun of horribly in school. And so I would have to have, like, make-believe friends. This is when I was really quite young, all right? 8, 7, 6, somewhere in there. I really had, you know, a lot of make-believe friends. To some degree, that's not uncommon to have make-believe friends. We know this. Little kids, as they play tea, you know, they have their teacups and all this other stuff. But you're supposed to grow out of that. But if you're a child whose voice is not heard, okay, if your voice, you're trying to voice yourself and people are not listening to you, they're not believing you, they're telling you to shut up, it didn't happen, or you're making this up, whatever the case might be, then children, because they need to hear their voice being spoken, they'll have their make-believe friends that goes longer than 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years old. It turns into something, and that's where your dissociation comes in, okay, later on, because your mind does split, it fragments, and you have more than, of course, one personality. We have a lot of people like that on our show. That's nothing uncommon. Yeah. So, you know, this is what child abuse does to children. And if they don't get the help that they need, for God's sake, what happens? They grow up to be adults if they make it. And maybe they are the alcoholic, so the drunk down the street, he's in the bar, or she is in the bar, okay? They do not take care of themselves well. They turn to things that they shouldn't. They may be very promiscuous, horribly promiscuous, or they'll be ice cold, frigid the other way. It's one way or the other. They don't do well with relationships. Okay, they have problems with relationships. They certainly have trust issues. They may have problems at work. Maybe they can't keep a job because they feel so different. See, I have that problem yet, Lori, because when I go into a crowd, I mean, I may be up. I'm able now, Miss Panic Child, my panic is gone. But one thing that stayed with me is I never feel quite real. I feel like there's like, I don't know, like a shadow over me or something. I feel uncomfortable, maybe uncomfortable, until I get to, I don't know, if it's a presentation, and 5 minutes in, I'm fine. I'm okay. Everything's good, okay? But it always leaves a lasting something. Now, I did have counselors that worked with me before I actually became a counselor. I worked with the methadone and all kinds of stuff like that, alcohol, drug abuse, all that. But before I did that, I went for help. It was through a church. They saved my life. There was one good Catholic church. Yay! Okay. Yes, they did. They saved me. Put me through a battery of tests. Told me I wasn't crazy. And like I've said before, that was the best high that I'd ever had, because we grow up with the feeling that we are different, we're dirty, we're different, we're crazy, because it's what we're fed when we're kids.
Yeah.
And if we don't have something to break that cycle, then we turn into very dysfunctional adults who are going to do dysfunctional things, who might end up certainly in the prison system. I know you work at the prison. I worked detention at one point. I kept moving around a lot from job to job to try and bring in money for my children. I had two children, and I left their father. No one, probation couldn't even help me. They didn't know where he was. They had his name wrong. And then all of a sudden, they found him. Yeah. And so this is what happens. And people out there, they don't get it. You know, a lot of people don't get it. So all we can do, like on these shows that we all have, we have these shows and we write our books and we have our music and we have all kinds of things. That, you know, we have a lot of talent. See, we didn't know we had talent. We all of a sudden realized that we had talent, okay? And we use our talent wherever, which way it goes. It could be in poetry. It could be an artist. I have a friend that's a wonderful artist. It, all kinds of things. And, you know, all these things that we have, then what we do is we show it to the public. We bring it out to society. And I can tell you this, that's a positive. 11 years ago when I started NASCAR, okay, when I had written my book, Panic Child, A Howling True Story of Sexual Abuse and Neglect, I had one scathing bad review. Boy, am I going to get even with her. But anyway, the point is this. The point is this. there was only one other book when I was published on Amazon about child abuse.
Yep.
Now you go to Amazon, and in these 11 years, all right, there's been such a huge amount of people that are starting to speak up, speak out, write books, write songs, do art. Whatever your talent might be, it's coming out. And this is how we educate the people. And we do presentations, those of us that do that. Go ahead.
No, I'm listening. I'm agreeing, actually, with what you're saying.
This is what we do. This is what we do.
It's very interesting. There still needs to be more talk about incest within families. We talk about childhood sexual abuse, but we do not talk as freely about incest, using the word incest. That seems to be still very much taboo.
It is. You're absolutely right. I mean, it's not quite as bad as 11 years ago. 11 years ago, it wasn't mentioned. No, it wasn't mentioned at all. Oh, my God.
I know.
Now it's
kind of distant.
People are talking. They're talking a little bit more about it. I think someone wants to say something. Darlene? Who? Mary Ellen? Who? I can't. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yes. This is Mary Ellen. Yes. The terminology incest, it's like people do, they fear away from it. And I myself have always said, like, if the word incest comes up, nobody has nothing to say. If the word rape comes up, people are, like, infuriated, and how could that happen? And that person did this and whatever. But they are very quick to shut it down when they hear incest. Like, they do not want to, I don't know. Can't go there, or denial. I don't know what it is. It's always bothered me. That is not a significant issue, Like, I could sit back and think, this happened to me and nobody's outraged, but you're going to be outraged about someone else, and it's called a different word. I never understood that. I think when I was younger, it used to really make me feel like maybe it's not that big a deal. It felt huge to me. Why aren't people reacting? I don't know. I think it definitely needs to be talked about more. And openly, and yes, I'm thankful for this show.
Yeah, I am too. I mean, one thing about with our show, we're all over the place, all over the world, and so people listen at different times. So we have the archives, and people who are listening now know that. But I'll just say it out, if you want to listen to the show later on, that's fine. Okay, just so long as you're listening. See, that's the thing. I want you to listen, and I want you to learn, because we've been through it all, and a lot of us have had a lot of schooling in that area too. Whether you have or you haven't, you've been through it. See, you walked the walk. You've walked the walk. We could all be teachers. We could all, what I'm saying? Because we've been there. We've been there. And we're still standing. I like to say that. We're still standing. Even though we've gone through what we've gone through, we're still standing. And that means something. We're survivors, and we have a lot to offer, people who don't understand child abuse. Hey, if you walk into some place and say, I'm a representative, and everyone on this show right now, you're a representative of NASCA, okay? That's what you are. And if you want to go, like, to daycare centers where I go and I give out information, I'm going to start doing it over in PA again. I give handout information a lot of things are still closed. This year is so different. So presentations, I don't know what's going to happen. Churches are just starting to open. I don't know. But, you know, we can hand out all kinds of information just from our NASCA website if you just give the signs of abuse even so that people know what to look for. And I think we should all be mandated reporters. Go ahead.
This is Darlene. I want to make another point. You know, there's probably some that's listening that need to come on and tell their stories on this program as well.
Mm-hmm. That's right. There's so many people that want to, you know, that they don't want to tell their story because maybe they are still ashamed. Or maybe they feel really dirty like I did. But, see, I'm a fighter. I'm nasty. I don't. You're going to hurt me. I'm going to hurt you back. And that's what I did in school because I had to because I was so made fun of. And I sort of like kept a little bit of that in my adult life, which I'm happy about. I don't consider that a brick wall, okay? A lot of people put up brick walls in front of them, as we call it on NASCA, because they don't want people in. They don't want to let people in to hear this story because it might ruin the family. Or maybe they've been threatened. I was told I was going to get killed a couple times. Okay, I'm still standing. But, you know, the point is, you know, there's reasons why we build up that wall, and that can be for an emotional, psychological reasoning why so many of us are hard at trying to start relationships again because we have been through so much. We have the trust issues, and there are trust issues out there, you bet, okay? So, you know, but as we go along in the healing journey, as time goes by on the healing journey, and we may make a few mistakes along the way, and that's okay. So we go back a couple of steps, and then we move forward, maybe three or four more steps. We learn from our mistakes, and we get further on in our healing journey so that we can speak as freely as we're doing right now tonight. Okay? See, we're way into our healing journey. Sometimes when you give presentations, I have to bring this up, but sometimes when you give presentations, you have to be careful because people, first of all, they don't know enough about child abuse. And secondly, if you go and go, wow, right, and throw it in their face, and you know, you have to learn to look at your crowd. Who are the people you're speaking to, okay? Are they going to understand what you're saying? Are they going to get up and walk out because they're offended at what you're saying? There's all kinds of things you have to do with presentations. But if you have a successful, really successful presentation, you've reached a lot of people. You can do that in churches. You can do that in schools. We do have cards. You can send away for our cards. You know that, and you are a representative of NASCA. This is another way of spreading the word about child abuse. And I ask that more people do that. Okay. Now listen, we only have, 6 minutes or something left. Yeah, it's going down. This show is almost over. And I want to say one thing. You know, you guys were a wonderful panel, every single one of you. And even the 111 number who didn't want to speak, that's okay because you listened, okay? And that's important. And I hope that there's things from this show that you're able to take out, you know, and maybe pass along the way. Or maybe you yourself are someone, you know, who needed help. And you needed to have the encouraging words of we, the survivors, on this show. And you're a survivor too, probably, okay? So if we can just, you know, not get too complacent. I use that word because a lot of people who have survived, Lori, they think, okay, got over that. I'm real glad about that. And, hey, I'm glad too, you know. But if we go out and spread the word and keep talking as we're speaking tonight, then the more people that we have to reach, and that's good. So, Lori, what I'm going to do, I'm going to leave this up to you now because the last 5 minutes, we allow for the person who comes on as a co-host or as a special guest, whatever the case might be, to talk and to leave hope. And maybe even some direction. Go ahead.
All I can say is whoever is, first of all, to the panelists tonight, I just want to say that I appreciate your courage and your willingness to speak openly, because that is so instrumental to healing. Just having the courage to speak openly. And I just hope that people that are listening, I would encourage whoever to tell your story in whatever way you can, because the more people understand what child abuse is, maybe the more something can truly be done about it. We've come a long way, and we have way far to go. We're definitely not at the end point, that's for sure. And I just really, the fact that you're listening, it means that you're seeking recovery and that you want to know something about yourself. And I would encourage people to just seek your truth, because there's no better freedom than knowing who you are and knowing it. When I came into my recovery, I described, like, I felt like I was a book, and very important chapters were ripped out of my book. And I felt like such an incomplete adult, that there were holes in my book. There were sections that I knew nothing about. And as horrifying as it was to remember, it's the thing that brought me my most sanity, because we're terrified of what we don't know, more so than what we do know. And so, you know, if you have spaces in your life and you think, wow, I feel like I didn't even live in those spaces of time, it means that you were abused, and chances are you were sexually abused. And it's worthwhile to start, if you have any thought whatsoever that you could have been sexually abused, it's worth pursuing. At least get to the website and look at the symptoms and signs of, you know, adult survivors abused as children. And there's wonderful books that you can read about learning more about symptoms of adult survivors of childhood sexual abuse. And I just encourage people to educate yourself as much as you can about it, because that's where freedom lies. It really does. So
I agree with you. And you know what? There's children out there waiting for someone to help them. And I always like to say, too, we can become someone's hero. Okay, we can become a child's hero, because these children, they need heroes. And so we survivors, if we keep our mouth shut, instead of going out and trying to help one way or another, okay, I don't care if it's with incest or whatever it is, because we spoke a lot about that tonight. But with child abuse in general, physical, mental, emotional, you see something, say something, okay? Make a phone call. You can always call 1-800-4-A-CHILD, 1-800-4-A-CHILD, and you can report, because a lot of people, they don't like worry, they don't like to call in their own areas because they're afraid of retaliation, whatever. So if you call that national number, 1-800-4-A-CHILD, they will call, they will make phone calls for you, and you don't have to give your name, okay? Just tell them what you saw.
No, you don't.
Or even what you think. Yeah. Yep. And so just keep that in mind. Now, I only have 60 seconds left, so I'm going to thank everyone for being here. And I'm going to say prayers. I think we all should say prayers that we stay safe. Watch out. Look in on the elderly, too. There's elderly out there, the homebound. These are things that we can do. Wear your masks. I believe in wearing the mask. I don't know, but because no one knows quite what to do with that. But the point is, better safe than sorry. But if you're going to go and check on people, wear a mask. And please do, okay? Because we have the elderly to worry about, the homebound, and certainly the children, okay? So Thank you for being here. God bless you. And tomorrow night we'll have another show. Okay, and thank you so much, Lori, for being here. Thank you.
Thank
and good night, everybody.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
good
you.
Night.
Okay. Okay, love you all. Bye-bye now.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You are forgotten after all that you've done.
Okay.